Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Advice You Didn't Take with your girl Remy Ray. And I have the amazing Claire Clotty with me today. I want Claire to introduce herself because she's a woman of multiple talents, and we've kind of known each other for quite some years now, isn't it?
Yeah, we have indeed. It's been a pleasure, actually. We've had one of those long distance relationships.
Yeah. The growth has been real. So tell us a little bit about what you do, Claire.
Okay, you know, I always find that question quite difficult because I do so many things. Yes. So I try and make it succinct by saying I'm a community development consultant, yes, as well as a freelance broadcast journalist. And so that includes print journalism, radio, digital media, and my other full-time job is as a mother.
Yes, you are a mum. I see your Insta snap stories where you were like, on one side of the road we have this, and on the other, yes, side of the road we have that.
Yes, full school run. Yeah, I mean, I say I'm a full-time mum. I co-parent, so my daughter's dad has her part of the week and I have her the other part of the week. So that is a complexity in itself.
I can imagine.
But even when she's not here, I'm like, right, got to get the food in, got to get the uniform ironed, got to make sure I've got time for her when she gets home. So yeah, full-time mother, child always on the brain.
You know what, you're like the second mum that I've spoken to that has that kind of setup, and I just wonder how that feels, because you have the intensity of having a child around and then you don't, and then you do, and then you don't, and it's like having to balance your work, your career development, you know, your baby all at once. That must be crazy.
It is crazy. It's a real complexity. And, you know, I say to my sisters, I wouldn't wish, you know, single parentness on anyone. And, you know, shout out to all the mothers or fathers, absolutely, who are looking after their multiple children.
Yeah.
But it's just not the easiest thing ever. But I take stock of the fact that my daughter is 6, she's going to be 7, one day she's going to be 17, God willing, and soon I can let her go on about her business.
Absolutely.
And I can do a little bit more focus on mine, you know?
Absolutely. So how have things panned out being a single mum and trying to go on this creative kind of broadcasting, the change with social media, and just keeping that balance of everything moving around you but still being a mum? You know what I mean? And still being at the core of her development and the person that you want her to become. You know what I mean? Like, how does that all work?
Yeah, of course. Well, for me, I always say I'm Claire before I'm anything else.
Absolutely.
So I was Claire before I was a mum. I was somebody's daughter before I was a mum. I had my own dreams and desires, and I still have them. And I really believe that I'd be a good mum to my daughter if I'm the best version of myself.
Absolutely.
And the best version of myself is me doing what I need to do for me.
Yep.
So, you know, as a mother, it's very difficult. All of this, all of these stereotypes, all of these perceptions about what a good mother should or is.
Yep.
But, you know, I talk to myself like madwoman sometimes. I think to myself, look, at the end of the day, as much as we, you know, the majority of us love our parents, love our mothers, they're the best people in the world, yada, 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 we've always got an issue. We've always got something that we say, oh, I wish my mum did more of this, or I wish my dad wasn't like that in this way. I still love him, though. So I kind of have given myself permission to be a bit flawed,
yeah,
and recognise that at some stage my daughter's going to, you know, challenge me and, you know, maybe criticise some of my behaviours or actions or choices. And I've just got to be able to be really authentic and really give her my truth.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, cover it over and try and deceive her and that make her, you know, leave her feeling even worse. So
it's funny that you touched on that, actually. It's funny that you touched on that, because I actually struggled with that for a long time. What my mum didn't do, what my family didn't do, that didn't allow me to then position myself in such a capacity that will allow me to excel. And it's funny that you said that as a young mum. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I always say, I have this story that I tell, that I remember falling out of love with my mum when I was about 11. Not that I don't love her, but I fell out of love with the choices that she made and some of the reasoning that I was trying to comprehend at that age. And it's all because I started to grow into a woman, but the choices that my mum made didn't really fit with my principles and my morals that I was like creating for myself. You know what I mean? And it's I know it's
deep, I think it happens to the best of us. I think yeah. So, yeah, and it's just something that we don't discuss, and there's no guidance.
Absolutely.
So I am very clear because I had that same experience with my mum. My dad and my mum, who were married, I never spoke to my dad and my dad for about 7 years. So going home and seeing, you know, your father and just about nodding at each other for 7 years was extremely painful.
Yeah.
And I also recognised where, you know, like at 11, 13, things with my mum were difficult.
Yeah.
And working with young people, I appreciate that, you know, your mum's not always going to be, you know, your biggest role model throughout life, which is why I'm so committed to working with young people, because I want my daughter to look outside of the home, because someday she is going to look outside of the home. I'm not going to be relevant. I'm not going to be cool. I'm not going to know what's really going down on the streets and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But I would like to think that there are positive young people who she can look up to and who can kind of give her inspiration and guidance when the time comes for that interim period where I'm no longer relevant.
It definitely takes a village, and I don't have any kids at the moment, but I see a lot of you guys grinding with your kids, still hustling and bustling and just trying to get through it. And, you know, any way that people like us on the outside that are in the community can kind of be a help in some capacity. If we see, you know, one of your children out and about, like, say something, tell them, like,
yes,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? Like, and I want people to be like that with my children, because that is the only way that you learn. You know what I mean?
It really is. I couldn't get home, right? Yeah. Without somebody having called my mum and said, oh, I saw Claire standing up outside McDonald's talking to a boy in a grey tracksuit. I would be like, what is wrong with this? This was even before the times of Big Brother. I'm thinking, this woman has got this thing on lock.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly like that. I love hearing, I love talking to women about their family dynamics and how, you know, that has kind of transitioned you into being the woman that you are. How did your childhood shape your entrepreneurial kind of journey? Because you're slash entrepreneurial slash worker slash, you know what I mean? So
yeah, so yeah, you're right. You've got to, you know, there's a saying in Ghana, and it's called Sankofa, and that means you got to look back, or there's a bird and it's looking back on itself. So I often look back and now recognize that my upbringing was very far from normal, and there's no such thing as normal, but I had quite an interesting childhood in that I was the second child for my mum, first child for my dad.
I don't know.
You never know what comes out of the bag later on in life, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? But my older brother was blind, or is a blind, deaf, dumb, epileptic and diabetic. Wow. And I grew up around disabled children.
Yeah.
So for me, disability was something normal, yet I now recognise how it wasn't or isn't still for many people a normal thing.
Especially with the black culture, like, we shy away from that.
Yeah, the stigma attached. You know, my mum told me how her relationship with my brother's dad ended, and I was devastated. You know, things like, you know, she must have cheated, or, you know, that someone put juju on her, that child can't be mine because, so many traumatic things that she had to go through. And I was called Claire because I came out clear, i.e. no disabilities.
Yeah.
So, you know, identity has always been something quite important to me because of my, you know, I knew my mother's story, and I know bits and pieces of my dad's story. So after my two siblings came along, my two sisters, who are my best friends, by the way, after they came along, I had quite a lot of responsibility. I was the eldest girl. I had to, you know, my mum drilled it in my head from the age of five, six. You know, when I die, you will have to look after your brother. You have to set the example for your sisters.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always striving to be the best that I could be, not necessarily for myself, but for others around me.
Yeah, the unit.
Yeah, yeah. And my dad was, oh my gosh, he was hardcore. My mum would say he's a perpetual student, always learning, always academic. In academia, that's the way forward. Books before boys. He was so strict.
Yeah.
So where I had homework from school, I'd always have homework at home, and homework at home consisted of doing household things. My mum wanted me to be a woman, and my dad and my mum would both make me do extra homework. So we had to read the dictionary. Pick 10 to 20 words. Jesus. And it's not just we had to describe what those words were. We had to write them down in sentences or write the story.
Proper comprehension.
Mate, I used to hate it. I thought, these people are living on another planet. We're in England. I've got my homework already. Attitude. Hated it. But actually, it really set me up for where I am now, and my eagerness and interest in learning and understanding and studying and recognising that there's no end to this. My mum wasn't very academic in that way. She was just a hustler. This woman would sell shitol, which is black pepper. She would sell material. She would be trading with people, jewellery. She'd be going to her day job. She'd be looking after the four kids. And I just thought, well, this is what you do. You work hard. Yeah, so work hard. I kind of adopted that.
I love the fact that you touched on your heritage just there, because the way that we grow up, even though we're all black, the way a Ghanaian may raise their children, the way a Nigerian raises, the way a Jamaican raises their children are very, very, very similar. It's just different use of language that actually, you know, creates that small little barrier. But ultimately, we're all raised the same. And now it just made me think back, because I'm dyslexic, that my family didn't know anything about dyslexic. And I could just imagine if, God forbid, you were dyslexic in your household, that would have been...
Listen, that word didn't even exist, my friend. Exactly. You just had to learn. You just had to study. Nothing
was impossible. What's dyslexia? Are you stupid?
Just pretend some English person has designs to make you think it's okay to slow down. Yeah. They would have been a bit ruthless. But I guess with my mum not being as academic, she used to say to me all the time, I didn't need to go to university to get a degree in common sense.
Absolutely.
So I had the perfect balance where my dad was so book focused, but, you know, his social
awkwardness
was difficult, because, you know, really difficult for him to come in the house.
He was just a difficult vibe-er.
Oh, Charlie, he would just growl at them, or, you know, make me feel really awkward for having a friend, female or male, in the house. Whereas my mum was very sociable, very personable. And, you know, the culture thing is so important to me, because as young children, my siblings and I grew up in foster care for a short period of time, about 2 years I did, my younger sister 5 years, my brother's been in and out of supported accommodation for years. So we were all separated for a short period of time, and I lived in the household where I was the youngest black child. I had a younger Pakistani brother. I had a Jamaican brother. I had two English sisters and an English brother. They were all older than me. So understanding culture, like, diversity, was forced. It was forced upon me. I had no choice. You know, I had no choice.
It's amazing.
And it is amazing. I recognize now that, you know, it was that was a real gift. However, it was very difficult. And then, of course, coming back home was difficult, adapting to a really Ghanaian household where I'd just been, you know, allowed to go and play in the park and free up, you know, free up myself. And I live in West London, so there was quite a big Caribbean community, and everyone thought my mum was Grenadian and her best friend's Grenadian, and my mum and her could never understand what they were saying, but they'd always bust up, and it'd be like, you know, how is this friendship even managing to sustain itself? And, you know, equally being a fair complexion Ghanaian, that's come with its complexities as well. You know, even family members, you know, looking at me in a certain way or assuming that I think I'm better because, you know, I'm slightly fairer. It's just, it's madness.
It's the same because I'm Jamaican and fair. And it's the same dynamic that people automatically assume because you're light, that one, you're not connected to your heritage, and two, you don't understand anything about your culture, and on top of it, you just think you are way too nice for the world. And it's horrible.
It is. And I think sometimes that, you know, we are the solution, but sometimes we are the problem, and we allow for others to dictate our narrative or tell us how things should be, when we can create our own. And we have been creating our own in many ways, but, you know, it would be great if we can come together and really, you know, help each other up and spread as well. So
that's a good segue into the next elements that I want to talk to you about, the state of the UK environment in terms of creatives and, you know, being black in broadcasting, and how is it changing, or is it changing at all?
I think it's changing for the better.
Slowly, very slowly.
And, you know, I'm going to say something that's a bit controversial, you know, because I've got to reflect on my own experience. There's this assumption that, you know, you're black, you need to be into urban hip-hop culture and stuff. And
you can't be eclectic.
I mean, I love Stormzy and that, but don't ask me to sing any of his lyrics. No. It's like, you know, tap the toe, nod the head kind of thing. I don't know, you know. I've never been that way inclined. You know, I used to be the one that used to stop the tape, write down the lyrics, rewind, play it again. Right. No, I was a very visual learner, so I had to see it. So there's a slight assumption that you've got to be extreme in all areas to be relevant.
Yeah.
So I've got to be really extrovert and, you know, really confident in my body and look at my bum and, this is my best asset and this is an African asset and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Or I have to be really down and know all my trainers and music, and it's just like, listen, I'm just your average person. I'm perfectly imperfect.
Yes,
and I do love a bit of academia. I do love, you know, politics to a certain degree, but not to the degree where I'm out there canvassing for Labour or anything like that. But you know, I'm just interested in a range of things, and I don't need to be an expert in something very specific to be relevant. Does that make sense?
Or to, I almost feel like sometimes just being a black person, you're so assumed all the time, like everything is assumed for you, that it's kind of like, I can understand why the generations beneath us are a little bit confused, because they've kind of been told exactly how to be to validate who they are. You know what I mean? Where we've grown up in that era where we understand the struggle, but now we're going through this digital age where everything's, the most stupidest things become very relevant and very, you know what I mean? Like, it's just such a different age now. So different.
It really is different. I mean, the natural hair debate and discussion is one that, you know, illustrates it for me quite well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so glad that we're seeing lots of Afro hair on the screens, and, you know, people have really embraced it.
Yeah.
But I remember when I shaved all my hair off.
Listen,
people thought, at that time, I was actually going through a separation, but people thought I was losing the plot. Like, are you all right, Ken? I'm all right. No, but are you really all right, you know? And as I was embarking on a career in journalism, people were like, Claire, if you want to be a presenter, you know, you're niching yourself with your Afro hair. And when I told people I was going to get locks, that was it. They were like, Claire, you're going to niche yourself. You're going to make yourself unmarketable. You're not going to appeal to a wider audience. Blah, 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 blah. And I just thought, you know what? They may be right.
Ignorant. Like, and I'm a firm believer that we're living in the age of being your best seller. You know what I mean? You're your best seller. You're your best manufacturer. It's all about how you want to cultivate what you're doing, you know what I mean? And people like say, oh, you know, you're boxing yourself in by only doing this, or you're boxing yourself in by only doing that. I think it's so stupid in a digital age, because you literally, tomorrow you wanted to start a channel all about locks, you could. If you wanted to start a channel all about being black in media, you could. You know what I mean? It's down to the individual. And I think the niches is what's actually making this world go round, because otherwise we'll all be on the Zara starter kit with bundles, the chicken. You know what I mean? It's like, difference is what is like fueling everything that's going on, because everybody's looking for their tribe.
Yeah, I mean, that is so real and so accurate. I guess the difficulty comes in when we're looking at finances you know, the black pound and our economic power, our financial power. And I think that's where I have concerns, because, you know, for a number of things, it's quantity over quality. So how many followers do you have? That's what makes you relevant. Or and I'm like, listen, bro, people buy followers. You know, don't you understand this? And, you know, look at engagement over the numbers. But minds haven't got there yet. And I think several people in positions of power are just, they're so under pressure or lazy even. They're just quick wins. Okay, they look like they've got a lot of followers. That means we can push our product, our figures, or make some money off of their back. And there are a few people like, yeah, cool, mummy, I made it.
I think that also that we're partially to blame for that as well by allowing brands, because I was reading an article actually not long ago that micro influencers are probably much more effective than one major influencer just based on the fact that they have better engagement. So I feel like the brands that are not taking that into consideration are really missing the mark each and every time, because 10 micro influencers against one, say for instance Kim Kardashian, probably could affect more people just based on the fact that more people are looking for representations that are much more like themselves, you know?
Definitely. It's just a slower grind for those of us who don't buy into that, because, I mean, let's face it, I know how to get more followers. I've studied this thing. I post a couple of pictures that I know get good responses and I'm consistent with that, and that's it. But I'm not that. You know, I don't want to be known for, you know, just one thing. I just want to be known for being the best version of myself, for doing as I say I'm going to do, and that's inform, entertain, inspire. And if I have a positive impact, or, you know, can influence and encourage people, and it's like a handful of people, I'm good with that, you know. I'm really good with that.
I was going to ask you, so what do you see yourself moving, like, what are the areas that you see yourself really moving forward in, like, for the future? Is it more digital? Is it more community based? Is it more media / presenting? Like, where do you really see yourself going directionally based on the fact that digital has changed everything so much?
Yeah, I mean, I have cast my net pretty wide, and I'm just pulling the net in and seeing what's in, what catch I've got.
Yeah.
So for me to prescribe to something very, very specific, I know, you know, with all of these like laws of attraction and manifestation, it's like, be very specific, ask the universe exactly what you want. And in a way I do, but I no longer prescribe it. So I no longer say, right, it has to be this television program, it has to be this amount of views. Per week. You know, it's like, right, this is what I want to do. I want to, again, inform, entertain, inspire, encourage and influence and have an impact in my community and the international community. These are my skills. These are my talents. You know, God, universe, you show me what it is. Ancestors, where you at? Like, you know, I'm here for a reason. I know I'm living in my purpose.
I was just about to ask, do you already feel like you're already living in your purpose? Because I speak to a lot of women, believe it or not, whether they're doing well or not, and a lot of them are not living in their purpose, and that's why they get burnt out.
Living in purpose, burning out. I guess...
Because they're looking at what everybody else is doing, and because it's getting that traction, they then direct their focus to it. However, it's not really... them, you know what I mean? It's not really their purpose. So then they swap, they change, they shuffle, they're unsure, and then, you know, just those little things set in, and then you don't know your direction, you don't know where you're going, because
do you know what it is? I think
hello, can you hear me?
Hi.
You've gone off for some reason.
Oh, I'm back. So For me, time feels like we're in a race against time. And I think that has created a number of problems for people. You know, as a woman, you know, you're thinking about your clock, your ovaries still ticking over, how many eggs you've got, all the rest of it. And I know that there are ways to support yourself now, whether that's, you know, freezing your eggs and so on and so forth. We've seen all of these amazing experiences on the gram, and we want to travel the world all in one year. We want to go to 110 destinations because that's what we're seeing on a daily. So I think, you know, it's not necessarily that people aren't living in their purpose. I think that people are so focused on the final destination.
Yeah.
And we're all guilty of it. Trust me, girls, sometimes, you know, as I said, happiness is fluid. Sometimes I'm very happy, sometimes I'm very miserable. Yeah. But I know that I'm my own worst enemy. Like I can get into a space where I am, you know, dictating what things should be, forgetting that there's a greater thing happening around me. I can't control everything, and actually, if I just go with the flow a bit more, rather than, you know, try and surf everything, surf the waves, and, you know, yeah, it's hard, it's not easy, and I get support. You know, I've got family, great family, and when I find myself in a place of, you know, self-bullying, yeah, I go check in with my counsellor. I'm like, hey, I'm back, it's yeah, me, this I don't know why I'm here again, but this is going on for me. And, you know, now it takes only a couple of sessions and I'm good again. But
I love the fact that you're open about that, because a lot of women, a lot of people actually feel like counsellors are almost the devil, if you want. They are so afraid to go and engage with counsellors or to speak to people about their business because they're afraid of how people may judge them. And I've had counselling before when I had a really, really bad breakup. Like, I felt like my world had shattered. Like, I couldn't step one foot in front of the other because I just lost my whole entire focus at that stage. And it's actually, I tell her, she saved my life because she really brought me back because of what I was going through at that time. And I like the fact that you're open about that, because a lot of people aren't.
Mate, invest in yourself. I've had counsellors for years. I think my first experience of counselling was at high school, and it was a counsellor, a black counsellor called Claire.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't even know why I was going to go see this woman called Claire. Well, I do, actually. I was just bunking class. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to go see the counsellor. That was a way to get out of class, isn't it, and just get a bit of space. But actually, looking back at that, I realised that I didn't feel like I had space at home, and I didn't feel like I had space at school. Therefore, going to the counsellor was just time for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's why I continued. I don't know whether that early influence or early experience is why I continue to go to counselling. But I find in this very, very busy world, and with, you know, my big family and all my commitments and responsibilities, finding time for myself and to really hear myself is very important. So it's not what the counsellor says. You know, I've had very good counsellors and I've had pretty poor counsellors, but it's about me actually hearing my voice. And even though I journal, like, there's something about speaking it and feeling it and allowing the emotions to come out. And it's good for me. And I would say to everyone, listen, invest in a counsellor, because actually your friends want the best for you, or your real friends do, and sometimes they collude with you.
They simplify sometimes, and
that's right, with the best interest at heart, but it's not necessarily the most helpful thing. So
I was gonna ask you, actually, what changes would you like to see in women collaborating? And you spoke about your like your family and your friend network, but what about in the creative space? What more would you like to see from people like me and you? Like, podcasts are becoming quite a big thing in the UK now, so, you know, we're collaborating in that sense. But how about in person? How about having those difficult talks? And how about we speak about rates and how brands are cheating us and, you know, things like that, so that we can get on an even playing field with some of these others that are out there?
Yeah, I mean, I see some really great practice taking place, and I would say that I don't actually have a tribe, you know. I've always kind of been like it. I've always dipped in and dipped out of lots circles. Of different circles, and I can only relate or relay that back to my childhood experience, where I was in and out of situations and spaces. So I get quite claustrophobic, and also the commitment is quite high, you know. I barely have time to see my huge family, let alone be linking up and, you know, just lavishing and liming with people. But I recognise that that is very, very important. So I guess I am proud of the progress that black women are making, the progress that I'm seeing.
Yeah.
I have a couple of go-tos who I don't see, but, you know, I can check in with them, you know. And it's not just people in front of the screen, it's people behind the scenes, and I find those people really, really powerful. And I've got to shout out, like, a friend of mine, Michelle Owusu.
Yeah.
She's so behind the scenes, and she's just doing what she's doing, but she's having such an a positive, you know, impact on others. And that's not to discredit my friends who are not in the industry per se, but you know, there are people in the industry, Jennifer Ogole Morgan, who set up, you know, Bang Radio back in the day. She's very much, I don't want to be seen, but
yeah,
doing her thing. So I think there needs to be more, not there needs to be more collaboration. There needs to be more celebration of the good things that are going on.
Yeah.
And I think for myself, I do tell myself sometimes, Claire, you know, don't be so, it's not that I'm standoffish, but, you know, it's okay to get involved and it's okay to let people know that this is what you're like. Because
yeah,
I don't think everyone can understand it at times. They don't understand why I'm not, if I'm in it, I should really be in it.
Yeah.
But I'm not really in it like that.
No, I totally can relate, actually, because I'm not the type of person, like if I'm in the networking environment, I will network. But if I'm not in the network environment, I'm a very like, back person. Like, I don't need to be in the center of anything, or I don't feel like I need to essentially mingle with loads and loads of different people. Like, I have my support system, I have my network, and I never really feel like I have to go above and beyond to meet and greet and stuff like that. So I can totally relate to where you're coming from. Don't get me wrong, we're courteous and we can be in an environment where we can do both, but we're probably just a bit more introverted, just slightly, not a lot, but slightly.
Yeah, there's a word for us, Remy. It slipped my mind. My dad will say, you didn't read it well. You should have written it down. If you wrote it down, you would have remembered. Yeah, but there's, you know, I'm very much like that. I am an extrovert, but I'm also an introvert.
Yeah.
I like my own space where, you know, I've got many friends, but hardly any of them come to my house.
Yeah.
And it's not that they're not welcome, but I think they also recognise that once Claire's in her house, she's in her house, yeah, you know, like, that's me. Door's shut. And, yeah, I think sometimes there is, you know, for some people, you know, everyone's got their individual experience. Some people need that, right?
Validation, you know, that surrounding, yeah, that space.
That's right, that's yeah, right. But there are a few like us, Remy. You know, another woman that I got a shout out, Corinne Allen, she is doing her thing. And it's we're not always, people don't always understand us. So
yeah,
they don't necessarily want to, not invest, I don't even know whether that's the word. They admire us from the distance.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily want to invite us to the party.
Well, actually, the reason why I even reached out to you, well, one of the reasons I should say, I always wanted to sit and podcast with you, actually, but I'm running an accountability program, and you were actually one of the most inspiring people that one of my clients wrote down. And I was thinking,
wow.
I know. And I thought that, oh my God, that like Claire's accessible to me. Let me reach out to Claire and get some of Claire's thoughts so that I can relay this back to somebody in my program that's probably going to benefit from me and you mashing it up together. And it's probably going to help that person in such a way because they really get to understand who you are that they can't see through an Instagram post or a picture, you know what I mean?
And it's really remarkable that you say that, because, you know, sometimes because I'm just doing what I'm doing,
you know,
markers of success, you know, sometimes need to be pointed out to me. So the fact that somebody is, you know, recognized me as, you know, someone that they hold in high regard is really quite humbling, because people don't tell me these things. I don't know. You know, it's my sisters who are always like, oh, so proud of you,
yeah,
keep going, and yeah, blah blah, and you know, so it's really nice to get feedback,
nice,
because I'm just doing what I'm doing,
yeah,
but you know, it'd be nice to know that
it's not in vain, you know, because that's the thing, people think like people like us don't need it because we're doing our thing and we're just getting on with it, you know what I mean? But no, it's absolutely, when I saw that, I was like, go Claire, you know what I mean? Because I was like, it's a win, you know what I mean?
Definitely. I whoever that is, sending my love right back to this. But yeah.
I can't say her name because it's private and confidential. But I'll definitely give send her over the link so that she can have a listen and just and she can now know that, you know, just by saying something like that can help and uplift and keep you pushing in the right direction.
Yeah, no, definitely. And at the moment, I'm just casting my net even wider. So one of my biggest things is, you know, not, I really shouldn't say building a bridge because there's bridges already there, but, you know, really strengthening my connection, between the diaspora, the wider diaspora. So, you know, I love the fusion of Africa and the Caribbean. I love the fusion of, you know, Black Americans, and, you know, all of us mishmashing together rather than it being very silo things that, right, I'm English and this is what I bring, and yeah. I'm American, this is what I bring, and I'm from Ghana, this is what I bring. I like, for me, excuse me, Afrobeat and soca music is just doing it for me at the moment. It's embodying everything that I want as a black woman, you know.
That was actually my next question. It was, what about Ghana? Like, will you connect back to Ghana more? Are you trying to connect back to Ghana more? How has being Ghanaian really shaped your vision now as somebody with knowledge, as somebody with wisdom of Africa? How have things changed for you?
I love Ghana. I've been going to Ghana every 2 years since I was like 11 years old. Yeah. And I love it. I speak one of the languages with an English accent, so I sound like a French person speaking English, but it's all good. I could go back, but I can't see myself there at this moment in time.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why. Of course I'm sure why. I know why. It's my daughter. My daughter's here. Her dad is here. So I'm here for a while.
Yeah.
When she's older, though, I would definitely be looking at branching out to Ghana, but I want to be traveling between Africa and the Caribbean. That's my thing. Africa and the Caribbean, just like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You know, I've been to Ghana several times, but I've also been to Barbados. I love Trinidad. I love Tobago. Been to Jamaica, and I just feel at home in
both.
You know, it's the sun. I though I was born and raised in the UK, something about the melanin just needs the warmth, needs the sun, needs the natural food. My bowels do so much better when I'm over there, TMI, but it's so true, you know?
I totally can relate, actually. And it's funny because while social media has a lot of noise, I've actually gained a lot of insight into our people. You know what I mean? Like, the people, the feel of Africa. I've only dated Africans as far back as I can remember. And since I was young, Caribbean people dating African people, that was like, why are you always dating Africans?
Yeah. And girlfriend? The closeness,
you know what I mean? Just the closeness of being who we are as a collective. And I think that's really, really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, social media, digital media has definitely given us a platform to tell our own stories.
Yeah.
I just want the investment to follow. You know, that's you know, it's great that we are telling our stories, but shit, we need to get paid for telling our stories.
Absolutely.
I mean, not that that's not the reason why we're telling our stories, but it's just like, we need investment from somewhere.
Yeah, but I almost feel like I was reading an article recently about the Bill Gates and Melinda Foundation that have pledged 73 million to eradicate polio from Nigeria. And I was thinking, between all those millionaires in Nigeria, why do you need external investment from Bill Gates to invest in something that you guys, between probably five of you, could kill? You know what I mean? It's just like, are we always looking for external investment, and that's why we're having the problems that we have, and not having that conversation between us so that we can understand what we need to excel as black people from our black heritage, if that makes sense? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, but this is where sometimes I hate the media, because there are some people, some introverts, real introverts, African investors, who are doing the damn thing, but they're not sensational, they're not glossy, they're not entertainment, so nobody talks about them.
Yeah.
So a lot of work is already being done.
Yeah.
It's just, are journalists actually telling those stories in the way that we need to hear them?
Yeah.
Are we ready to read them? Are we looking for those stories?
Yeah.
You know, The Young Empire on Instagram is one of my favorite pages, and shout out the woman behind that. I don't know whether she actually likes people to know that she done it, but just the stories that she's managed to sieve and you know, shake up, that's what we need to be reading. But instead, I think we're too busy looking at, you know, some of the sensational headlines, you know, being paid for by certain part of the community who seem to be in the position and power to shape the way that we think.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and actually, yes, I do want Bill Gates money in there as well, because we all now, had no reparation. So yeah, come on, send something through, you know, support the cause. I'm happy for that. I'm not going to say no to your money. No, come on, let's put it in a pot together and make things happen.
I'm neither for or against external investment, but I definitely feel that in order for the water to run fluidly, we need to also invest back in ourselves, because when people see that we'll take the hit for ourselves, then people are more likely to invest. When I was looking for like sponsorship and stuff, or when I was doing like events and things like that, it's once somebody else jumps on ship that everybody follows for some reason. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I feel like if, you know, major investors from Africa are really interested in investing into the next generations, then somebody just needs to shout about it so that other people can see, because that's how we're getting our news. We're getting it in short little sound bites, and that's the only way we can follow and see what's going on. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
if somebody needs to take the leap of faith and just shout about it, and then others can follow suit.
I do have faith that, you know, things are improving, and they will continue to improve. But, you know, Remy, life is about contrast, you know. Absolutely. As you've got day, you've got night. As you've got black, you've got white. As you've got happy, you've got sad. And I think we got to embrace the good with the bad and recognise that even if we have, you know, a shift somewhere else, we're going to have a shift and some difficulties to deal with in another area. And that's just how life works.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, it's a dream to think that everything's just going to be smooth and positive and go in the right direction, but it's never been that way.
No.
You know, you look at the Bible, it's never been that way. You look at, you know, our history, and, you know, it's never been that way. I don't think that is what life's about. It's about how we cope and how we build our character to endure the good and the bad.
I just got two more questions I wanted to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
One is, who inspires you in 2000 and 2000, since the 2000s, I should say, or just overall, I guess, and three books that people must read?
Who inspires me? That's a real tricky question, because are we talking about in the field that I want to be working in?
Just in life, who is like your inspiration since you've been an adult? Since you've been working in this space, who is somebody, or it could be two people, that like really get you going and make you think, you know what, this is all possible, because when I look at that person, I know.
Wow, so many. I absolutely love Tracy Ellis Ross. I adore the woman. I can't wait for us to chink our glasses together. It's going to happen, really. It's going to happen. Who else inspires me? Jennifer Lewis inspires me. And these are women, but there are also several men who inspire me. And they're not necessarily
known
out there as massive headliners. But, you know, David McQueen, Steve White, they're authors as well. Pastor T.D. Jakes. Sarah Torre, and you said one. Geez, sorry, Remy. You should have given me this in advance so I could really do a needs analysis.
You know why? I think it's important, because sometimes I speak to people and they're like, oh, I don't really have an inspiration. But I don't think you're supposed to have an inspiration. You're supposed to have a plethora of like people that get you going, you know what I mean? So there was obviously no wrong or right answer to finding out who inspires you, but it's nice to know, because some of those people in there are British as well.
Yeah, okay. So you know, you I'll go on to the next one, because you asked me which books people should read, and I've got to shout out someone who I connected with online. You know, her name is Marielle Laguerre, and she's British and she's living in New York.
She's my next podcast.
Oh, wow, she's amazing. She really is amazing. And when I say that we've just connected, like, I never knew this woman from anywhere, and we've just vibes. We don't talk all the time or anything like that, but she's written a book called The Personal Brand Bible for Ambitious Women.
Yeah, I need to buy it.
She is amazing. another book that I love, and it's an old school book, and it might seem a bit random, but I think it's very good for Black people to understand where they are in this world, and it's Mallory Blackman's Noughts and Crosses.
I've got Noughts and Crosses, actually. I don't think I've read it, though, but I've got it.
Babes, like, I've got a bookshelf still. I know everyone's about the Kindle life and stuff.
No,
but
I'm a book girl.
I need my daughter to read this book, especially as she's, you know, of mixed heritage. Yeah. You know, I really want her to understand the world she lives in. So I would recommend that as a second book. And my boyfriend would tell me off for not saying the Bible, but I'm not going to say it. So sorry, boyfriend. Sorry, babe. I do also love The Love Manual by Steve White. And I say that it's a very accessible book, and it looks at relationships, but very importantly, looking at the relationship that you have with yourself.
Yes.
Like, you want to be loved, and you better love yourself first, babes. You know, so yeah, there's three books for now.
Yeah,
I recommend loads of books because I've got a shelf, but yeah, those for now.
I love it. Claire, I've so enjoyed talking to you. It's just so refreshing sometimes just talking to somebody that's just, you know, just gets it. I love it.
I really appreciate it, and I'm humbled that you've got me on this podcast and see me as worthy to share my story, so I appreciate that.
Oh, no,
thank
I
you.
I love it. We're definitely trying to grow, and we're just definitely trying to tap into the women that are on the ground and don't have hundreds of thousands of followers but still doing absolutely important work, and I really, really appreciate the work that you're doing.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing, so stay rising, babe. Stay rising.
Thank you very much, and that's it. See you on the other side.